Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
Welcome to episode 168. Tom, top of the day to you.
Crack open a cold one with the boys. It's party time at 168. Whoa. Ooh, 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 ooh. I realize I'm dancing inaudibly.
You were raising the roof.
I was.
And I was making the walls go out.
We should party outdoors, sounds like.
We really should. I have got quite a lot of cool casting news for us this week.
Nice.
I often like to start there. I go like, all right, let's see who's doing stuff so we can get excited in the near future. And there's a lot of stuff we can get excited about, so I'm pretty happy.
Nice. I've got some trailers. There was a bit of Super Bowl action yesterday or Superb Owl, if you will. Some stuff I've watched.
I've got a quiz for you.
Hooray.
Yay.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. Researchers at the Watchersville University have released their findings regarding a Radiohead song from 1995. There are no fake plastic trees in the hit single Fake Plastic Trees. They have classified the mentioned fake Chinese rubber plant as neither plastic or tree-like. If pushed, they would accept the term small shrub. Their lawyers are speaking to Radiohead's barrister, and apparently it's a little scary because the QC uses a lot of big words that no one else understands. But they are still hopeful they can force the band to change the song's title to Random Fake Stuff. Production of The Real Housewives of Watchersville has been cancelled after the cast were found to be too nice to each other. Executive said, and I quote, "It goes against the program's tone, synopsis, mission statement, rating successes and contracts to have a bunch of women getting on and enjoying each other's company." Earlier this week, cats around town started losing their mind as a convoy of trucks carrying catnip drove through the area. It very easily could have been a Pied Piper catastrophe if it weren't for the heads up the council received beforehand. Owners were able to leave out little piles of dried catnip around the home to stop their meow machines from chasing after the trucks. Tommy the tabby, who lost his sense of smell 8 years ago, was literally the only cat who made absolutely no move to leave the sunny spot in the lounge room that day. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
All right, so the first one I want to get into is that I feel like every week we talk about Borderlands new casting. Jamie Lee Curtis.
All right.
Now I'm starting to get more of an idea because I had, you know, you had Cate Blanchett, then Kevin Hart, and he was like, where is this going?
And is it Eli Roth directing?
Eli Roth is directing it, and the writer is the guy who created the Chernobyl HBO series.
Sure.
So it was just a lot happening, but I feel like Jamie Lee Curtis is almost like the missing link that kind of ties it all together. Like for me, now I feel the context. She's so cool.
She is very cool.
She's playing Tanis, who is an archaeologist on Pandora who might have the key to finding out where the vault is kind of thing. She's going to have historical beef, can I call it that, with Cate Blanchett's character. So Kevin Hart's going to be somewhere in the middle there. And I'm pretty sure there are four characters in Borderlands, so maybe we're waiting for another big name.
There's got to be a tank.
Please say it's The Rock.
I mean, it would be a very good pairing with Kevin Hart.
Absolutely.
I don't know if he'd have time for it.
So who else could we have? I would like to see Jerry from Walking Dead. I think he could bring a lot to that.
Ethan Suplee, he's gotten really jacked now. He was on My Name is Earl.
Yeah, he looks totally different.
Yeah, that could be a very cool breakout
role. And he could be a bit fun, you know, like he's a funny guy.
That's what I'm trying to think of. Who's funny, who's a big unit.
Yep.
I mean, there are some wrestlers that would probably put their hand up, apart from The Rock. Mm. I could quite often – there's a guy named Kevin Owens. He's not nearly tall enough, but he's got the perfect troll personality for this sort of thing.
Does he need to be that tall? Who's the tallest cast member there so far? Maybe Cate Blanchett?
Yeah, because there's that photo of her towering over Tyga.
Yeah. I didn't think she was that tall, but yeah.
Just she was in the healer boots.
She could still wear them.
Yeah.
No one would think any differently. So, yeah, that movie's looking interesting. Like, they're getting big names in there.
Do you think there's the potential that some of these – is it going to be – is it a Suicide Squad situation? Will some of these characters just b- blow up or die quickly. I've never played enough Borderlands to really have enough context.
I played about, I don't know, an hour into the first one and it crashed on me twice when I attempted to do that. And I was like, I'm not playing this anymore. The second one I played a bit more. I really liked it.
Because it's more RPG, isn't it? You're leveling up your character.
You're leveling up your character. So it's a looter shooter as well. But those four characters, you can pick between which one you want to be. But I believe the others are all still part of the story.
Okay. The reason, so in my head, I've gotten it mixed up with Fortnite. So in my head, and this is the movie I think that would go bananas with a cast, would be a Fortnite film, because then you can get 100 actors of various caliber sizes and stuff, and you just chuck them on the island. And that's, you know, it's Hunger Games or whatever, but let's get the biggest names possible and blow them all up.
Casting, they can either be casting or going for the big role. So instead of, it's not a crown in... it's a crown in Fall Guys. What is it in Fortnite? What do you
the
win?
Flag. Are you trying to get the flag? I don't know.
Is it win a winner chicken dinner or something like
and
that?
The blue. We're very old.
But to be number one, to be the person with the winner winner chicken dinner.
Yes.
That's the person who gets the lead role at the end.
Well, I like that. Movie. Oh, I don't even mean that. I just mean make a movie that's actually just a round of Fortnite starring big name celebs. Like, and you hit up Sam Rockwell and you're like, all they have to say is, do you want to be the coolest dad in your kid's eyes?
Yeah.
And he's like, of course. And that's like, it's 2 days' work. I'm like, all right.
Yes, I'll be there.
What do you have to do? Oh, we're going to put a bunch of squigs underneath your shirt, squibs under your shirt, and there you go, blow up.
Jack Black, you can play a bush. He'd be there.
Yes.
Yeah. I get it. I think it would work. It's got legs.
Maybe they can still include some elements of that in the Borderlands movie.
Yeah.
Eli Roth, he's got lots of friends. He's very well connected and he's very liked.
And he knows how to have fun in stuff.
Yeah, he
does. He knows how to make things fun.
I watched him. There's a show on Disney called Earth to Ned and it's the an alien.
Heard of it.
It's the alien puppet that's interviewing human celebrities to learn about our ways. And they do a horror episode and bring up Eli Roth. And he's so charming. He plays along so well and stuff like that.
He gets it.
Oh, he really does. He really does. He makes fun of himself.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm excited about this movie. What else have you found around the traps?
So I was quite excited to see that, you know, I'm a big fan of Chris Gethard. Mm. He had the Chris Gethard show in, which is like a live access, like a public access television show where it was completely live and things went off the rail constantly. He finished that show up a couple of years ago. In that time, he's dabbled with a little bit more live TV stuff, but he's mainly been focusing. He has a podcast that's really successful called Beautiful Anonymous. I don't know if you've heard about this.
No, I haven't heard of it.
So basically he tweets out the radio line and someone calls and talks to someone before Chris, and Chris doesn't get their name, doesn't get any details about them, just starts interviewing them and does, and the one rule is he can't hang up first. Some of these podcasts go on really, really long and they get really, really in depth and you never find out
who the person is.
No.
What a great idea.
And then it's not celebrities, it's just everyday people.
Mm.
And the way he interviews people, because it's all anonymous and he gets them to open up and really share some very, very fascinating things or revealing things, never any incriminating stuff, but
personal stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting. Anyway, that's being adapted into a TV show. Well, it's not really on TV. It's, I've never heard of either of these. First Look Media's streaming service topic.
Yeah. I'm exactly the same as you. Haven't heard of either of those.
But no.
So topic, it sounds like it's going to be like interview style.
So Maria Bamford has a show on there as well about mental health
and
anxiety and dealing with things like that.
Awesome.
But yeah, adapting this show, Beautiful Anonymous, to television is going to be an interesting challenge.
Yeah. I'm wondering how they're going to do it. I mean, is it almost like he just sits at a desk and then the call is still on the phone?
I think it's going to be a bit of that. They're going to apparently use some images and like photography and short videos and stuff to illustrate, not necessarily animate what the caller is talking about.
Yep.
So I think it might not be completely live to air.
Mm.
They'll film it live and then, you know, edit in the footage and stuff like that. But that's going to be a really interesting take.
Yeah.
And I think with audio stuff, maybe we're cool with not getting the full answer of who the person is, but I'm wondering whether that will completely translate to television, of whether it will feel as cathartic as it does when you're listening, when you're watching, and you don't get quite the same completion.
Yeah, that's a good point. And isn't it interesting that as an audience member, you allow things like that? And I wonder if it's because audio, we're never going to know what either of them look like
exactly
during the program.
It's already an expectation of something you're listening to that you don't get that full. You complete the picture in your mind.
Mm.
Once the video, once the visuals are added, that element is removed, and so then you're having it enforced.
It kind of reminds me a bit like you said, like these people are on the phone, and when someone is on the phone, like in a podcast or radio or whatever, the audience doesn't go, this is an outrage. I can't hear them as well as the other person who's got a proper microphone. And it's because we, as an audience member, are allowing the quality to be diminished on the phone, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But on television, we're like, why are they on the phone? Why are they on the phone? Yeah, can't we have them on? Yeah. Look, I think what they're going to aim for, and they probably hit the nail on the head if they've already been doing it as a podcast, is they'll aim for the story first.
Yep.
So have this really strong stories be what captivates you and, as an audience member, allows you to kind of just go along with it.
Well, that's it. The people that hit up the phone line aren't necessarily – like they screen them. And so they find the best stories before they go in there and stuff. And it's not like telling him, hey, you should talk about this, but the person that's calling in knows that they've got a good story and will help.
Yeah. The producers would be pretty busy.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Anyway, it's a cool mix, and I'm looking forward to that coming. That'll be relatively soon, I think. I don't know how I will watch that if it's on a streaming service called
that
Topic
you've never heard of before.
But hey, we'll see.
Still hung up on who shot Mr. Burns? You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I often like to check in with George R. R. Martin's blogs.
You have said this before. You need to check in.
I always check in on him, just see how he's going. Mm. Even though I actually don't think I care that much anymore about getting the book, the final.
Sure, yeah.
But I still, I don't know, maybe it's like an automatic response. I'm like, oh, what? His name's here. But he's put a new blog up, and I've just picked a little excerpt. And he said, what was good about 2020 besides the election? Well, for me, there was work. He said, I wrote hundreds and hundreds of pages of The Winds of Winter in 2020. He said, this is the best year I've had since it began. And he said, why? I don't know. Maybe it was the isolation. Maybe I just got on a roll. Sometimes I do get on a roll. Sporadically though, right?
Yeah.
Very sporadically. Anyway, the rest of it was sort of him saying, even though I've written hundreds and hundreds of pages, don't expect me to release this book yet. He's toying with the fans, toying with them. But he did do a little shout out to Kong. So at least we know who he's going to back in Godzilla vs. Kong.
When was the last
years ago
book?
Right.
It was before the series, right?
I think so. So when did the series start? 2010?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah. I think 2010.
The series itself finished, what, 2018? And that was like maybe two seasons ahead of where the book stopped.
Yeah.
So he's got to write all of that and change it?
It's not going to happen.
He reminds me a bit of do you know that author Jasper Ford?
Yes.
He writes those really cool, quirky stories. He used to have one about literary detectives who would go inside books to make sure that all the characters are behaving themselves, so that when someone reads it, you know, John Stark is not taken.
Sure.
But, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, he started this story years ago and it was going to be a trilogy called Shades of Grey, not 50 Shades of Grey. But
just the one.
Yeah. And it was all about, like, people were born with a certain level of colour blindness.
Right.
And the more colours you could see, the higher up in society you were. And it was like, it's a really weird, cool world that he'd built. And the first book, the only book, finished on a real cliffhanger where suddenly you're like, wait a second, maybe there's more to this. You know, you know how they usually do those kind of things. And then I was like, oh, cool, can't wait for the next one. I think that book came out in 2005. And every now and then I see him tweet or blog or whatever, and he does this same thing George R. R. Martin does, where he says, yeah, I'll get to it first, but first I've just written these 12 other books that have nothing to do with it. And you're like, just tell us you don't want to do it. Like, just say, I don't want to do it. I mean, I've given up now.
Maybe he can't. Maybe he's narrative. Like, sometimes maybe you get stuck into it. Yeah, a narrative knot, and you just can't untangle it. And it's not worth the effort of trying to do that when you could, as you say, write 12 other books.
Start whole new books. I mean, I've enjoyed his other novels, but I keep thinking back to that because it had such a great premise and a world. And I would like to see the end of it, but I also know there's far less of a chance than the George R. R. Martin story being finished. But we can't get everything we want.
We can't. Hey, talking of getting everything you want.
Yes.
If you're a fan of Rob Dyrdek's ridiculousness.
I do check into that show every now and then.
On MTV. I've got great news for you.
What?
So you know how for years people have said, like, MTV doesn't show music videos anymore?
And it's sort of true.
And right, it's very, very true. At the moment, Ridiculousness currently is shown 128 hours per week on MTV.
No wonder I check in on it every now and then.
Which is 5.3 days or 76% of the week of airtime. It's super cheap to make. They've got like 27 seasons of it or something, and they can just show it. And it scratches that itch for us of, you know, it's America's funniest home videos, but a bit more grown up.
Yeah. It's just compilation fail videos.
And that sort of fine entertainment has been really, really popular in the last year because you don't necessarily want the hard work of a gritty drama.
Yeah.
You just want to put on some background shit and watching some schadenfreude of other people get hurt doesn't. Anyway, 76% of MTV at the moment
is ridiculous.
America's Funniest Home Videos.
Sure. I mean, I really hope for the three of them on that tiny little stage, I really hope that they're getting paid accordingly. You're using us for 76% of your day. Can we get 76% of the revenue for that day?
They'd be on some sweet advertising deals. I imagine they're good.
Especially him.
Yeah.
Yeah. The others are, they're still on it. They're on as much as he is. Yeah.
They wouldn't be getting paid what he is.
No.
But they'd still be well looked after.
It's a very watchable show.
Yeah. So I think that's...
That's crazy.
Yep. And, it has been a gradual shift away from music videos over the last 40 years.
Yeah.
From the very beginning, they started programming in other stuff. But that's quite damning.
It's also the kind of program that they can continue to make during COVID.
Yep.
They actually don't need an audience there at all. They could do it like, what was that show called on E? It's had like a heap of different hosts, and it's always the one guy in
Talk Soup.
Talk Soup, the soup. Yeah. And they've always had the crew laughing.
Yep.
You don't need John anything McCall. Else. Yeah. Heaps of them. Elizabeth Hurley is someone I'd forgotten about, but get ready because she's coming back to a sitcom at your local CBS television station.
Huh.
Yeah, right? So she's going to play this. Firstly, it's just a pilot, and she's going to play a character called Georgia, and the sitcom's called Welcome to Georgia, and it's about her daughter and I think son-in-law have to either move in with her or hang out with her more often. Like they need to use her to help with their day-to-day lives. And she's a bit of a loose cannon, you know, a bit of like your Patsy and Adina kind of person, I think.
Right. This sounds awful. Awful. Do you know who's behind it?
No, I don't know who's behind it, but Taron Killam, in SNL.
Yeah, and he did Single Parents.
Yeah. He's going to play the son-in-law.
All right, that makes me a little more interested because he does some wild stuff.
Elizabeth Hurley.
She's good in Austin Powers.
And Bedazzled.
Now, did she marry someone royal or something? I seem to remember that she stopped acting because she got involved in royalty or
something. Maybe. I don't know.
It feels like something she would do. Also, yeah. For a while there, when I was young, I thought she was dating Rupert Everett, which was just very off base.
That's okay. That's fine. I'm sure they're really good friends.
Yep, good buddies.
Yeah. Look, a final story for me. So you know how there was talking about that whole Doogie Howser remake, and everyone's like, cool, kids will like that. And it's going to be on Disney Plus, I believe, or at least Disney is behind it. Yeah, it's going to be on Disney Plus, but it's set in Hawaii and it's a girl.
Cool.
And her parents, at least her mum she's the chief of staff at the hospital, and the dad works in the hospital, and they go home to get, you know, together. It's just going to be all family all the time. But I
think that's an awesome idea.
I can see Shay watching that.
Oh, yeah. She's going to love that. I think so. Back in the day when Doogie was on, the big deal was, oh, look, it's a boy. And that was the big thing. He's a boy. It's that different outsider status and stuff. Having it as a girl in Hawaii, you know what I mean?
Yep.
That's ticking. It's going to be that same sort of thing of like, wow,
this is different.
Very different.
This is different. This is cool. We like this.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of feel-good stuff in there, a few jokes. Doogie is a bit funny, not a lot, but a bit funny.
All right, so if it's Disney, it means it's going to be ABC Studios, so I can already guess where they'll be filming in Oahu.
Yeah?
Yeah. So a lot of the people that worked on Hawaii Five-0, who are currently on Magnum PI over there.
Would they have all been on Lost as well?
Yes. Yeah, so there'll be, you know, people that have worked in that ABC family, Disney family for 20 years and stuff. They'll make that's cool.
Just continue.
Yep.
Yeah, nice. Anything else before we jump into the trailers?
One last one, and this is we'll put this under your dreaming mate, Tom Holland. He's put his hand up saying, "I'll play Bond if you want."
Oh, I saw that.
Will you, mate? You could be Jimmy Bond.
Like Scrappy Doo.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe his little. How Bond has not
had a prequel.
Well, I can't even remember what it's called, and I feel terrible about it if I'm going to talk about it. But there's a comic series that's the idea of what if every sexual encounter that Bond had left an uncared for child that a supervillain then collected all of these children up to take down the father. And you know, it's basically what if 500 illegitimate children on their 21st birthday formed a supervillain cabal, tried to take down the word and take revenge on their James Bondish father. I could see Tom Holland being involved in that.
That's fun. Yeah, he's not. Yeah, no.
You're a long way off there, mate.
Yeah, he's got years before that happens.
Yeah, let's see if you can handle a bit of roughness with Nathan Drake.
Yeah, that's going to be his stepping off point into the world of not having to wear a face mask.
And remember, buddy, you're Spider-Man. Everyone knows you as an American.
Mm.
You can be English as you want and be in plenty of stuff, but, like, that's the accent everyone knows you from.
Mm.
And a lot of people will find that weird.
And a lot of those people will be in America.
Yep. You think about Daniel Craig, which I'm sure we'll talk about soon enough.
Yep.
Choosing to do a very particular accent that is not his own. And that's the big showy thing.
Mm.
So if he wants to be Bond, a lot of people would perceive him doing his normal accent as him being showy. Sit down, Tom Holland. It's not for you.
No.
Let Tom Hardy have a crack.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've given up on the Idris Elba thing. It's too long. It's been too late.
He's too old.
Yeah.
Even Tom Hardy's getting a bit on.
I think he's older. He has to be next.
Well, I think he's older than when Daniel Craig started as Bond.
Well, Daniel Craig's been Bond for, 10 years at least?
A long time.
More, actually.
I don't care for him as Bond. I know that's a bit controversial with some people.
I'm going to say another controversial thing. I don't think he's good looking at all. I think he's funny looking.
There's a lot going on. There's a bit of craggy happening in there.
Yeah.
It's an interesting face.
The eyes are lovely and blue, but just a bit too blue.
Sure.
It's a lot, yeah.
He does often look like he's had his eyes touched up.
I reckon that's
they go through
pretty close
and pop a bit of blue.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah. Like if he was wearing something blue, then his eyes would do that. But he's not often, is he? I don't know. Bond.
Should we talk about some trailers?
Yes, please.
All right, because there was a bunch that came out with the Super Bowl yesterday.
Super Bowl.
Yes. So there was a very brief one for F9.
Yes, I saw literally 10 seconds of that.
So there was, I think it was only a 30-second ad.
Then I only missed a third, two-thirds.
It wasn't too much of it and stuff. Weirdly, we should have seen that movie last May.
Mm.
That's when it was like meant to come out. They should have already been working on 10 by now and all this. Yeah. What a
look, world. As someone who does not follow the Fast and Furious franchise, for me, I just went, that's that. Moved on.
It's going to be noisy. Helen Mirren was in one shot excitedly being spun in a car. It looks like someone's got a giant magnet in a truck that they can use to pluck cars sideways through buildings now. Of course.
That sounds a little like Wacky Races.
Oh, it's not realistic at all anymore.
Yeah, like, but I mean, people are going to go and watch it. They're going to have a great time. They're going to love it.
There's a chance that this is the movie they finally get to space.
I hope so.
If it's not this one, it's the next one.
A Tesla.
Yeah, just like they've had nuclear submarines. It's an ever escalating series of ludicrousness. Ludicrous was
speaking
in the trailer.
Of, yeah, he yes. was the person I saw in the trailer.
Oh, he belongs there.
Yeah.
The other one that I was very impressed with, there was a very short trailer at the Super Bowl and then a longer one posted online later for Falcon and the Winter Soldier,
mm-hmm.
Which is the series that starts the week after WandaVision ends.
So surely there has to be a link between both of them, like as in a bit of a cliffhanger in WandaVision, follow straight in.
I don't think so at
really?
All. I don't think they'll be connected in that way. I think Falcon and Winter Soldier is going to pick up. So I'm trying to dance around things. WandaVision, we haven't seen any of the fallout of Endgame apart from Wanda.
Being sad.
Yes. To our key Avengers. And these guys, the fallout for them was Cap leaving the Shield.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So that's, I think it's going to be a matter of that when we get to the Loki series, because I rewatched Infinity War and Endgame this week just because I'm
why not?
Back in the Marvel gear and stuff.
Yeah.
The Loki series is going to pick up, I imagine, right from that moment in Endgame where he gets the cosmic cube kicked at his feet. He leans down,
right.
Picks it,
and just
leans back. We never see him again.
Yep.
You know, I think these series are going to jump from a key moment in those films and continue their story out.
That makes sense.
So there may be a bit of stuff from WandaVision, but I don't. I think it's going to be taking place kind of at the same time, but elsewhere. Some really cool looking stuff in there. There's a character called Flag Smasher that we saw. We saw a woman rioting in the streets pulling on what looked like a blood-soaked Punisher mask. Flag Smasher in the comics is a male, either just Nazi or neo-Nazi based in America, who's constantly attacking Captain America for being weak and not being hard. It feels like this is going to be very, very, very topical.
I was about to say it feels a little close to home for America particularly.
So I don't know if they're going to do this, but there's a storyline with Cap involving a thing called a mad bomb, which is a bomb that's set off in the Capitol that doesn't destroy anything but creates riots and makes people give in to their basest instincts. And I'm sure pre-pandemic this felt like a very safe storyline to play that would feel relevant and timely in the same way Captain America the Winter Soldier. You think about that. It was, it felt 70s espionage thriller and elements of that stuff, but there was also a lot of timeliness of, you know, talking about surveillance state and whether it was right for Nick Fury to be preemptively attacking people, all this sort of stuff. If they can get into similar sorts of things on a TV show on Disney Plus, involving two of the lesser known superheroes and it looks like a buddy comedy mixed with, like, if WandaVision was a weird sitcom trip thing.
Yeah.
But still, like working within the MCU, this one looks like it's going to be like an 80s
Starsky and Hutch kind of thing. I wonder if they will go for it, because they've shown that they're very good at writing a story and presenting that story in a way that people and audiences get on board with, and also making it not too controversial, obviously. If the story doesn't come to fruition, I bet you anything they've sat around a table and tried to work on getting it to happen, and it just hasn't gone over the line in the end.
Yeah. I think there's going to be – look, the two guys that we know potentially up for wielding the shield, we know there's at least a few more people in there that maybe the government would prefer to be Captain America.
Yeah.
And things like that. So there's going to be a lot of question over who has the authority – to deem someone America's emblem. And this is, I don't know, there could be some very heady
stuff. Yeah, there's a lot happening there.
On the flip side, maybe they just skim past a lot of that. And it's, I was getting Lethal Weapon vibes from that trailer.
Ooh, yes. That's probably a bit better than the Starsky and Hutch.
I think it's going to be that sort of thing, because they make a whole lot of they're constantly addressing the fact in that trailer that Falcon is constantly like getting at Winter Soldier and antagonizing him.
You're gonna lose.
Yeah. So I'm very here for that show. The other two trailers, one very briefly is called Framing Britney Spears, which looks, Linz is very, very interested to watch that. In fact, when she does watch that, we may rope her in to come and give a deep dive.
If we could,
on that,
that'd be good.
Because she's got a lot more Britney knowledge than I do.
Yeah.
And the other one is a show coming called Fast Foodies. The first episode actually aired. I haven't sat down to watch it yet, but it's paired with Impractical Jokers. Mm-hmm. And it's, did I talk about this last week? I feel like I did. So. It's two former winners of Master Chef and one Iron Chef.
I don't think so.
Okay. They have to recreate fast food dishes from really fancy stuff. And they do this with celebs. So Joel McHale's on the first episode.
I think I've seen the ad for it. Maybe I watched that.
It looks like I don't know. Anyway, I can't remember if I talked about this last week or not, but I'm amped to watch this show.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like the kind of show that you would watch, and one that I would watch as well, just have fun watching them.
It's just on.
It's the kind of one that you don't want just one episode, though. Got to have a few.
Yeah, so
you can get through those kind of things really easily.
Look, I saw the trailer had Ron Funches getting very excited about something.
there you go. Yeah.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
It's time for watching suggestions. Look, Tom, I wanted to throw this one in the mix. I know that you've already seen it before, but last night watched Knives Out because, you know, Christopher Plummer passed away.
Sure.
And I went, I've been meaning to watch that, because I knew people who I respect their opinion on that kind of stuff had enjoyed it. So, and I watched it. Bloody brilliant.
I remember Nabil and I both enjoying that very much so.
Yep.
Excellently,
I think even
written.
Mick might have.
Yeah.
Given it a thumbs up as well. What a great movie.
Excellent. Like, great script.
Great script. It's very funny because about a week ago I watched Clue for the first time since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have it followed up by Knives Out.
Sure.
Was quite amusing. Beautifully filmed. A lot of symbolism in around there as well. And that whole thing with the can't lie without throwing up is the best story.
Very clever.
Trope I've ever, like, I was just like, this is not only hilarious, but they're using it so brilliantly.
And just the fact that, you know, not giving things away, but they give it away very quickly.
Yeah, they give it away very quickly. Had real sort of Psycho vibes to it, where you're like, that's the killer. And that's the main character who's dead, you know. And you're like, what just happened there? And you're like, all right, we're on for a ride. Then things are going to get crazy.
Yep. And even though you know what happened, how it happened is still a mystery right to the end.
Yeah.
And it's just very, very clever.
It's so good. And I even think a rewatch would be beneficial.
Rewatch is very good. I would like to throw to you that you should follow it up with a film called Brick.
Okay.
Which is Rian Johnson's, is it second film? It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, high school detective. So he's not an action detective, but some shit happens at school and he's trying to figure it out.
I like where this is going.
And it is very much, it is the first of, you know, they would later go on to do Looper together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But if you enjoyed this, the symbolism of what you're talking about of Knives Out, then Brick has a lot of that. And, you know, it's right out the gate. As I say, first or second film, I can't remember, but like clearly cemented it of this dude knows how to tell a great twisty story.
Brilliant story. And what a cast.
Yeah.
Everybody in that was amazing.
Jamie Lee.
Oh, one of my favourites. Yeah.
Daniel Craig, what an accent, chewing up all the scenery.
Yeah, at first I went, what is he doing with his voice? I really enjoyed the beginning where you first were introduced to him, and the way that he was trying to get everybody back on track was just to play a note on the piano. He's like, this is my song. I'm in charge of where the melody goes. Great movie. If you haven't watched it yet, please do. I didn't look at my phone, and that it made you work in that it made you concentrate to try and figure out, you know, where this was going. Oh, so fun. I'm going to watch it again sometime.
Do it.
Yeah. And Brick.
Yeah, Brick is, I'm a big fan of that movie. I love
Chef's
that movie.
Chef's kiss.
Mm-hmm. So I have been talking this film up for a little bit, but we should talk about Freaky.
We really do, because you mentioned it to me, I don't think on the podcast, but after the podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And I watched the trailer and I went, this looks good.
Yep.
Really good.
So the director and the team behind it are the people that did Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. And this is not a sequel to them, but it feels like it could very easily fit in the same universe and maybe even does take place in the same universe. But there is a small town. We are following the beginning of the film starts out with some cheerleaders and stuff at a party, just like every 80s slasher movie, and someone breaks in and brutally murders each of them. And we find out this small town has had a serial killer that kind of pops up around prom every year and disappears a lot of the rest of the time. And we're following a nerdy, meek, quiet girl who after some football game, her drunk mother does not pick her up in time and the serial killer comes out to get her.
It was going to happen.
The serial killer, of course, played by Vince Vaughn, which you don't normally get a big name playing the serial killer. But in the earlier scene when we'd seen him taking out some of the cheerleaders, he had snatched a weird-looking dagger from this home that he then uses to kill the girl. Attempts to, and somehow Freaky Friday style, their souls switch bodies.
It's such a great fresh premise to Freaky Friday.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like the film was going to, like they tried to call it Freaky Friday the 13th. It was just too close to home.
Yeah, okay.
And all of that I've described happens in the first 10 minutes of the film. They don't mess around. They get straight on with it. And Vince Vaughn is having a whale of a time playing a 17-year-old insecure girl
in a 50-year-old man's body who then has to try and convince her friends and everybody else that he's not a creepy man.
That's right. And at the same time, her body is knocking about the school trying to seduce boys, cause all sorts of mischief and murdering people. And maybe finds out that there's a time frame to try and reverse it or it's permanent.
Right, okay.
Yes.
There's always a time frame.
Exactly.
It's usually with the moon.
This thing, it plays out every trope and convention from the final girl movies of, you know, the heroic virgin girl that stays on to the end because she doesn't step outside the lines and stuff. It beautifully messes with all those conventions and stuff throughout. It is a like proudly queer movie written. Her best friend is super camp.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole storyline with the boy that she has liked and not had the courage to tell she's suddenly more courageous in this man's body and can open up and start. So there's a lot of homoeroticism that starts coming in.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in this movie.
It is.
It's not way, just Freaky Friday.
No, it is way deeper than I thought it was going to be. So the slasher aspect is kind of just the framework that they use to build this film on. That's more about empowering a 17-year-old girl. And in the 80s slasher movies, that girl was empowered because she lived to the end.
Yep.
Whereas this one is more she learns how to kill or like just learns how to be a badass, but not I don't know. It was I cannot wait till Shay is older and I can show her this film, like mid-teens sort of thing, because the gore isn't ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it feels very Shaun of the Dead in that way of a very intelligent
I get
comedy that is using horror for the setting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I've only watched the trailer, but to me it looked like something I wanted to watch straight away.
I'm keen to watch it again because it's,
Look at that, two rewatches needed. Ooh. Amazing. Ooh. This is not so much a rewatch, but a second season of Snowpiercer's back on Netflix, which is really cool. There's been a couple of episodes so far. Of course, we got to know that Mr. Wilford was around, and that's who we
is. That Sheen Bourne?
That's right. Sheen Bourne is there. Yes. He's there being wonderfully
alive.
Yeah, pretty much. Causing trouble. Trying to take back what's his, all that kind of thing. There's a disgruntled daughter, not of Shaun, but of someone else on the train. I don't give too much away just in case someone hasn't finished the first season. But, there's interesting developments and potentially an environmental storyline as well because, of course, the reason the train keeps going, and you remember this from the movie.
It's a bit cold.
The whole world's a bit cold, can't stop. Can't stop or we'll get cold too. Mm. All of humanity is on that train. All of humanity that is left is on that train. But it's just wonderful to have Snowpiercer back with so many things. Like even if you remember last year with Mandalorian, I was like, we're not getting the next season for ages. We're not getting it.
Yeah, sure.
And to have it come out, really happy.
Look, I had a similar yay thing because Impractical Jokers is back for
awesome.
It's on iTunes, it's volume 16. So I imagine this might be season 8 or 9.
Okay.
They've had a lot of seasons.
Yeah, they've been around for ages.
Yes. And I didn't, like, they've been very cagey about what they've been able to produce and stuff. So I didn't know whether we were getting a new season for a while. And it is different to, like, what we've seen so far. It's quite a bit different to what we've seen in the past.
It would have
to be. Yeah. So one of the first segments was them, they were being a radio producer.
Oh, yeah.
For people auditioning for a voiceover role. So it meant that they could be behind the glass and interacting with them. So I think we're going to see some clever stuff like that moving forward through the season.
Can you hear me, Fandango?
Very nice. But there was also, I don't think we'll see as much of them walking up to people in the street doing stuff in public, but more stuff in the supermarket. Where
like
they
a big setup kind of thing.
And stuff where they can interact with people from a shopping cart's distance away.
Okay,
do you know
I
what
get
I mean?
You.
Like they're very clever with how they're going to hide the sort of the distance requirements and things. But, yeah, it was so good to see new Jokers when I didn't think that was coming. I didn't think they could keep doing it. And they've been doing shows where they talk to each other on Zoom.
That's right.
So
which was different. I would imagine, and good if you knew that was the interim bit of content you were getting before they get back into their normal stuff.
I would quite happily let them keep doing the dinner party show because that was the first few episodes were a little stiff where they were getting into it, but by the end of it, they'd done 20 episodes and it's just them sitting around having a meal, talking and making each other laugh. And if you like their show – that was the perfect ointment of just
and I imagine if you like their show and have watched them for years, you feel like you're the other Impractical Joker at the dinner table or whatever.
It's this weird thing because they're always playing themselves. Yep. You feel like you know them intimately.
Yeah.
And that you know you'd all get along and this sort of stuff. So
we're all mates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have more than once sat down with a meal myself and Perfect. Had that on while they're eating. And that's what they encourage everyone to do. You know, let's have a TV dinner together and catch up on our week. Mm. Very clever.
Yeah, so that is very clever.
It's good to have the proper show back.
A wise man once leant over and whispered in my ear, "We tweet, therefore we are." Profound and a little creepy. Follow the Watchers on Twitter at TheWatchersPod1. They aren't creepy. I promise.
So, Wanda, it's time for our regular Wanda check-in. Very busy episode.
There's a lot going on.
Very, very busy, busy episode.
Spandex.
A lot of that. There was that early 90s haircut that Vision had, which I thought was lovely. It was very, if you remember, there was a time when the three boys in Home Improvement all had that exact same haircut. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's the vibe I was definitely getting. They were in the WandaVision equivalent of the Family Ties house. So it had changed the layout a bit, but it was that house.
It was, and that was my favorite of the intros so far.
Me too.
That song was superb.
Spot on.
And just even like the colouring in of the pictures was perfect. Growing Pains and Family Ties.
Yeah, it was all of that kind of thing. I love how she had to tell the son to stop jumping in years.
Yep.
You can't just jump in time.
There's a lot of hypocritical stuff from her.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't just run away from your problems and all this sort of stuff.
We're finding out a bit more about what she had been doing just before she set up WandaVision.
Yep.
She'd been busy.
So I've got a lot of questions around Vision's body specifically of like, had they been cutting him up for 5 years? Because that he died in Infinity War and that body was still rotting. And they were like, the footage we saw was them still scalpeling pieces off to.
I saw people online wondering why or how his body got out of Wakanda.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know enough about Marvel to be able to answer that question, but I assume that was an intentional thing so that fans could go, hang on, why?
I imagine there's going to be a few things that we find there. Mm. Question timelines and this sort of stuff.
I mean, potentially she could have taken it to somewhere where she thought help could, I don't know.
I think the fact that they're talking about the Vision having a will means that the Avengers took his body home.
Sure.
I think it's just as simple as that.
Yeah, right.
But like somehow the body got lost through the cracks. Wanda took it back. I thought it was very interesting that her Eastern European accent only returned when she was outside pissed off.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Which she hasn't had that accent in Infinity War or Endgame. The last time she spoke like that was in Civil War. So it's been quite a while since she's Americanized.
Mm.
So there's part of her that has regressed. I still don't think that she's the super big bad. I think there's someone either pulling her strings or whispered ideas in her ear that got completely out of control.
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
And she did seem genuinely confused by her recast brother showing up at the door at the end there.
It's such a sitcom thing, though. That is a sitcom thing.
He looked exactly like Blossom's brother. Like he looked exactly Joey Lawrence.
Yeah.
The leather jacket and everything.
And the voice, the stupid voice.
Yeah. Maybe the kids brought him.
Hmm?
Because they asked about him and she said he was far away. As in plucked from another reality far away.
And if they're able to, they've clearly got powers, so they can do these kind of things, and they don't know what he looks like.
So I believe I've talked about Mephisto before, but the demon that still fits the bill. The other one that could be cool, there's a guy named Dr. Druid or Mr. Druid. He's pretty cool, but I can't even remember the name. He has a bad guy that is just like a druid stuck in hell that has demon babies for hands.
Didn't expect that sentence to happen. That's brilliant. So
like where his wrists stop. It's as if he's wearing hand puppets that are demon babies.
Oh my goodness.
They've not got legs.
No.
Thing. But like
it's sock puppets.
Yep. That are demon babies. They're so angry at him all the time.
Brilliant.
That would be a swerve.
I really enjoyed the neighbor whose name I've just forgotten right now.
Catherine Hahn?
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, Agnes. Agnes. Was that her name?
Yes.
Yeah. Her saying, do you want me to do that line again?
And should we take it from the top?
Yeah. And they were both like, sorry, what's going on? She's like, well, I'm supposed to take the boys. That was interesting.
Yeah. Got to keep our eye on her.
Because if we remember Herb, I think his name is, the neighbour, the next door neighbour who basically pruned his whole way through a concrete wall, something wrong with that bloke. He didn't seem to be aware until she was speaking to him. I think she's, I think like what you said, she is very much aware of everything that's going on and potentially even knows why.
I think it would be a question of whether she instigated things or whether she's trying to help.
Yeah.
So we've still got a few episodes to go, and I think it could very easily put a target on her so we dislike her, and then we find out actually she's trying to be like a midwife.
A switcheroo. Yeah. It's a very fun show to watch. Isn't and it? To discuss and to think about. Really fun. Speaking of fun, would you like to do a quiz?
Yes, please.
This quiz is called Name the Pet. You've got to tell me what sort of animal were pets in these TV shows or movies.
Oh, gosh, okay.
So not the names.
All right.
But, I mean, if you had the name, extra points or something. Points. Yeah. Right. What sort of pet do the Simpsons have?
So they have Santa's Little Helper 1 and 2.
Yeah.
It's a dog. They have a cat whose name...
It's like Snowball or something.
Snowball.
Yep.
Or Snowy. No, Snowball's right, I think.
I think so.
But and at one point there was a three-eyed fish.
But no, that's it.
Bart won an elephant.
Did he?
Or maybe Homer won the elephant. One of the two of them had an elephant that was not allowed to keep.
Yeah,
and Homer had a spider pig.
Spider pig. Spider pig does whatever.
Those are the pets that I can remember.
That's good. You did well. Because there's a lot of seasons in that show.
And I stopped watching that many
me
years
too.
Ago.
Me too. Is an easy one for you. The Tanners in Full House.
They've got a dog. Is it a golden retriever?
Yeah. Do you remember its name? Just bonus points.
No.
That show's on all the time in your house.
I know, but I just tuned out.
Comet.
Right, there we go.
Yep.
It's Fuller House that's on a lot more. So that dog is long dead.
Yeah, fair. Sad.
It's sad.
But fair.
Yeah.
Ross in Friends
mm-hmm. has a capuchin monkey named Marcel.
Perfect. I knew you'd know that one. I even had to look up the name because I was like, he's going to get it.
That monkey was in a lot of things. It's the main monkey from 12 Monkeys.
Okay. Now, I feel like we've done research about this before.
We have.
Was it the same or a different one in Night at the Museum?
That was a different one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Both sassy, though.
Both sassy.
Very sassy.
Last time we had this conversation, you and I were in different positions on this topic.
Oh, we really were.
I was asking the questions and you were looking it up.
I remember that. Oh, my, how things have changed.
And Joey and Chandler had a duck and a...
Yep.
Duck and a chicken.
Yeah, a chook, yeah. Do you remember they used to hang out in the bathroom all most the of the time?
Yeah.
Mainly so they didn't have to have them on set all... Dr. Evil in Austin Powers.
Has a Siamese cat. Is it Siamese or skinless? A hairless cat.
A sphinx cat. Yeah. Called Mr. Bigglesworth.
Bigglesworth.
Yeah.
Very Dr. Claw.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
I haven't done my Dr. Claw voice in a while.
Could you?
It's nearly the end of the show. I could blow it out.
Come on, just do it this one time.
I'll get you next time, Gadget.
No,
I can't.
So good.
I have to warm up so much to do that.
I understand why we didn't get the last time, but I appreciated the fact that you did that. Thank you.
My apologies to everybody.
Wilbur in Mr. Ed.
Is it a horse?
Of course.
Of course. I don't know why I was stuck on that. I'm thinking
he's the famous Mr. Ed.
It's something. Wilbur the pig. Why am I thinking Wilbur the pig?
There is a Wilbur the pig somewhere.
Is that from 1984?
Right?
Not 84. Animal Farm.
Animal Farm, maybe.
Is there a Wilbur in that?
But Mr. Ed will only talk to Wilbur, so Wilbur looks crazy all the time.
Sure,
he was another sassy animal.
Was the pig in Charlotte's Web called Wilbur? I don't know why I'm stuck on this.
Because Charlotte's Web was the spider, right?
Yeah, but it was a pig that was really into the spider. Anyway, I'm going to stop thinking about pigs because we're talking about horses.
Mm. Well, we're about to not talk about either of those sort of animals. Sabrina's pet in Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
She has a black cat.
Do you remember the name?
Salem.
Yeah. And if you remember, he was actually like a witch who had done something really bad.
Been transformed into a sassy cat.
Like, did he try and like take over the world or something like that? So the rest of the witches turned him into a cat?
Feels like.
Yeah.
On point.
Yeah, and then he has to communicate every single day with the teenager. It sounds like an appropriate punishment. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
That was very good. If you have a quiz idea, you can send it into thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com. I hadn't said that email in a long time. I had to think about that. On that note, Tom, thank you very much.
Next